don't know.
True.
Yeah, it's just a tick.
Yeah, it is just a tip.
But sometimes people are like, so, sorry, are you a celebrity? Or like, are you someone else that I should know? And I'm like, you really don't have to know me.
Welcome to the State of the Artist podcast, a show about creatives doing good for the world. This week, I catch up with Austrian-born, New Zealand-based photographer Carmen Hutter. Her work has been featured multiple times by Nat Geo, and she's collaborated with brands such as Volkswagen, Sony, and Air New Zealand. In this episode, we talk about transitioning from fashion to photography to what it takes to be a full-time Instagrammer. We geek out about photography, staying grounded, and balancing hard work with being nice to yourself and others. I hope you enjoy today's episode.
Carmen.
Hi.
Thanks for joining the show.
You're so welcome.
It's an honor to have you here. I love your work on Instagram. So you are an adventure and a travel photographer. Would that be fair to say?
Yep, definitely.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'd like to sort of start with influences. Now, I've read that your dad used to be a mountaineer.
He did, yes.
Can we sort of start off with talking about how he influenced your life and also the work you do right now?
It's a very interesting question. I wish I could tell you this big story about how we would just go hiking every day. And I mean, we did go hiking quite a lot. But so I grew up with my dad only. He was my only legal guardian. And he moved from mountaineering into entrepreneurship and basically just worked nonstop. He has his own business. And the logistics world, which is a common kind of business what we have where I'm from, which is in Tyrol in Austria. And so I was by myself actually a lot. So he influenced myself in that way that, bless him, but that I definitely got very self-reliant very early on. And he also influenced myself in the way of not caring too much as long as you spend a lot of time outside and get your work done. That was always the priority. Just do your work, spend time outside. Everything else will come. I remember I once had this big fight. I was maybe 9 or 10. I had this big fight with my two neighbors, my best friends, Anna and Miriam. And, you know, we'd hang out as you would at this age, 24/7. And I came home crying that, you know, basically the whole friendship was broken up, just uber dramatic. And he was like, here's a bag of chips. Go say sorry to them and get on with your lives. Go outside, go for a walk. Because we lived in a very small town. There was basically mountains all around. And so we did. And I think that kind of approach to keeping it simple is definitely he influenced me the most with.
That's awesome. And I notice a lot of your photos, they are from a vantage point of elevation. Mm. Now, did you spend a lot of time growing up going on hikes with your dad or?
We did. I mean, the typical thing where I'm from on a Sunday is to, because everything or every store at home is closed on Sunday. So either you go to a restaurant or you go outside or you stay at home. So we would always, Sunday hikes are just a really normal thing. We'd always grab our backpacks and go for a hike on Sundays. Now, I did end up moving out of home very early on. I was 15. Not because I, you know, wanted to go on this big journey by myself, just because of what happened in my family with a new wife and things like this. And I just, when it comes to photography, I think as every creative person, I'm sure you'd agree, just like to have a slightly a different angle or point of view, because you have to differentiate yourself somehow. And for me, it's going up a higher mountain or getting a different angle from my point of elevation, then it feels a bit more unique.
Yeah. Mm. I guess since we're on that subject, is talk about the planning and the early prep work that goes into your photographs. So if there's an idea that you have of a photo you want to take, do you usually sort of plan that out in your hometown? You find the location, you Google it, and then you position yourself for that photo, or is it more off the cuff?
Depends on how if it's a full-on travel, like a photo job, then of course I'm much more planned out. If I'm going there to just create some new stuff, then it's, it could be a bit leisurely. If it's a kind of, oh, look at this guy, oh gosh, let's go, then it's whatever. So there is a lot of flexibility involved. But I do like to kind of know at least what spot works well for sunrise and sunset, because that can often be very different. And then once I'm at that spot, I just kind of go across, which works 80% of the time. When the sun in New Zealand, the sun sets so fast, or like sunsets don't, or sunrises don't last very long, so you got to be really quick and finding what works. But usually if a spot is good enough, or if I'm in like a good enough mindset, if I'm not too stressed, then I can kind of just make it work. And you'll often find me just lying down in the grass to get some random foreground, or running up. Like last weekend I was in the Coromandel and I was quite literally running up this hill. And for some reason, the grass was so deep, the grass went to my hips. So it was just, I would kept just falling back and I would just be running and I could see the sun setting and I had maybe 2 minutes, but I got a nice photo. It just depends
on
my energy levels. And
it sounds like you're quite run and gun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got so many nerdy photography questions
and
Lightroom questions, but before we dig into those, I want to talk a little bit about your mission. Adventure and sustainability are a big part of kind of your belief in what you practice. Can we talk a little bit about how that came about?
Yeah, interesting question. I am now, I have a really strong mission. It's create more than you consume. And that came about, I don't know how. I could have possibly just read it somewhere. I mean, I might be stealing it. I'm not claiming it to be my own. But it's more about this idea of focusing more on the output than what I'm taking into my life. Because I have learned in the past that just makes me feel better. When I started Instagram and I started, when I got a camera 3 years ago, I told everyone I'm a fashion blogger and I just basically posted selfies and food flat lays and I didn't have a strong vision because also I wasn't sure who I am. I mean, I was still in university. It was just a weird hobby for me, a little bit of a narcissistic kind of outbreak of, I'm just going to try this out because, I'm millennial and, that just felt like a thing I should do. And so I did, and it left me actually feeling very empty. It left me feeling really self-conscious and just not right. And I didn't understand what was going on until I kind of analyzed everything I'm doing in my life. I was studying business. I have a beautiful relationship with my boyfriend. We don't see each other too much because both of our jobs require us to travel a lot, but everything was a lot more stable to when I grew up, yet I felt just quite uneasy. And so I understood, everything I'm putting out is actually not who I am. I'm actually not fussed about makeup. I don't spent my days going shopping, yet I'm sitting here at New Zealand Fashion Week front row analyzing some almost high street fashion. It's not what Fashion Week's traditionally about, especially in New Zealand. There's a lot of just media hype, And so I'm babbling on, but really it came about just me not feeling very good. And then every year throughout university, ever since I've come to New Zealand for the last 6 or 7 years, I would go travel for about 3 months in summer. And I wouldn't do it for the photo. I would often go by myself, often with some friends or with my boyfriend. And I just would go to the randomest locations all across the world on no money. And I would have the time of my life. And it sounds so stereotypical because it is, which I don't mind. There's a reason these things are stereotypes. It works for a lot of people. It gives people perspective. And travel gives me perspective. And so taking photos of these places gives other people perspective too, because especially here we have scale in photos, or if you take a photograph of something that maybe people haven't seen so much before, they understand there's more in this world. And so that's what I started doing more. I got a camera in the first place because I got a scholarship to go to China. And I lost most of the photos because I had no idea about image backing up, which is just great. But it doesn't really matter. But I got the camera because of that. And then I went through this whole weird fashion year. And I came back to why I got the camera in the first place.
Wow. I find that really fascinating because it's a big jump from
yes.
fashion photography to travel photography.
Yeah.
I've kind of gone on a similar path.
I
was in studio and then I moved into fashion photography mm-hmm. for quite a while and I was doing editorial work. And, the request always comes up to sort of paint out blemishes and wrinkles mm-hmm. and flyaways. And so I started learning Photoshop specifically to touch up photos. But then I started getting all these other requests, like, can you make the hand longer and skinnier? And can you paint out, the moles? And one of the main reasons I actually got out of fashion photography was because I'm basically performing this digital plastic surgery on these women that are born with these beautiful features. And it kind of sets an unrealistic expectation of beauty, which I think is not good, especially for young girls growing up and looking at these magazines. And
it's fascinating. Yeah. And I mean, I still read Vogue magazine every now and then. I think the writing is spectacular. Like there's still some really amazing work out there.
It is,
I think that
it has to connect with you though.
Yeah.
And when it doesn't, I think it's good to
absolutely.
Recognize it.
And I think if it's just about the whole consumption side of things, it just doesn't make sense.
That's right.
It has to be something, but it's about everything in life. It's travel or, what you eat. I think it's just, there has to be some other value added.
Yeah. So was it the fact that your school visa kind of ended and then you had to get a vacation visa? Is that where the whole concept of adventure came about?
Yeah, that's where the whole concept of traveling came about. So, I grew up in the middle of Europe. And when I came to New Zealand, I realized how much there is in between me and my home, you know, the whole world, quite literally. It's on the other side of the world. And so, yeah, I got the student visa taken off me and I got my tourist visa. And I am definitely one of the only Austrian 18-year-olds that came to New Zealand not to travel, which, you know, if you just go to the airport now, it's not a thing anymore. Every, like, German-speaking person in the age group comes here to travel. I did not. I wanted to go. I had, you know, I wanted just to breathe. It was my time to breathe and just be. And so I did, and I traveled, which helped even more. And that's how the ball got rolling. And then next year I went to Indonesia, and then I went all across South America and China and back to Southeast Asia and New Zealand and Australia and all these different places in the world. So
I find that whole concept of a fresh start quite invigorating. Like I remember I hit puberty late. I started school when early, then I hit puberty late. So I was always like the runt in the pack, and I got bullied a lot, and it created this whole complex. But then I remember when I went to college and I moved away from home, it was like nobody at the school knows me. Yeah. No one in the city knows me. I could completely reinvent myself. And a similar thing happened when I moved to New Zealand. Can you talk a little bit about that? Kind of the pre-New Zealand Carmen and the post-New Zealand Carmen?
I think the pre-New Zealand Carmen, I just had it quite easy in self-pity. You know, it's an easy thing when you're so young. And I didn't have, like, a proper female role model in my life. And I was kicked out of home from my stepmom. And, you know, it was illegal back then to live by myself at that of a young age. So it was really rough. And I was supposed to go into a home with basically runaway youth and drug addicted youth. Yet I was going to the most academic high school in the region of Austria. So it was just complete dilemma. Ended up living by myself, and I just spent years in almost self-pity. There's still really good parts of my life, and I finished school and I had my friends. Thank God for that. And then I had my dad every few months and my brothers. But it was this really rough, strange time. And that was defining me. That was my definition. That was my definition of life, you know. I had it hard, full stop. I was good at school, full stop. That was me. There was not much else to me. I was telling everyone, I'm not creative. This is who I am. I'm the one who was kicked out of home, and I'm also the one who was really good in school, and that's really all you need to know about me. And when I came to New Zealand, obviously no one wants to know about that, and I didn't want to know about that anymore. It made no sense for me to go on and on about something that was already quite a long way away then, literally and figuratively. And so I was just a new person in respect of how I describe myself. And I think what you put out there, you get back. So the kind of friends I attracted and the kind of relationships and the travels and everything that came at me, even though my school went into receivership and all these weird things happened outside of my control, I could control myself again, which back at home was very hard to do, because in this hometown of, you know, 10,000 people where everyone knows you, everyone knows your name. My dad being an entrepreneur, like, everyone knows us and our story. So it was really hard to redefine myself from all this stigma. And I hear it didn't matter. And that was very important for me. Yeah.
Very cool. I'm wondering if we could shift gears a bit. So Instagram, I'd like to sort of dig into where reality sits versus the romantic perception of an influencer. Can we talk a little bit about the day-to-day, the grind and hustle, what actually goes into doing what you do?
I mean, it is so random and it is so elusive, which I think, you know, is the reason also for the romantic perception. Not necessarily to be true, but definitely parts of it are very romantic, and parts of it feed the ego so much about, you know, you have a following, people want to give you things as gifts because you have an influence, which is no different to anyone being an influencer without a social media following, meaning like an actress or, you know, I mean, it's just someone with a voice that you don't have. It's always been around. People make this out to be such a new thing and this whole millennial invention of a job, but it's always been there. It's always been people with a voice who create things, who are artists. These days, it's a lot more, possibly. I don't know, but it's been around for a long time. The day today is, it's an interesting one because, it changes so much. So there's a lot of people on Instagram who you might think do this as their main income, and they just don't. They would go on these really intense trips two or three times a year, would take an unbelievable amount of photos, and then that would be it. And then they would post and repost and post. You know, a lot of, especially in the travel world, a lot of big accounts, would you often see them reposting the most liked shots all over. You know, that's how they build their following. So that's one part. There's another part of, you know, what I do is, it's my income, it's my life. So, I mean, how my day looks, again, varies so much because sometimes, for example, next Monday, I'm going on a trip to Australia to work with a tourism board there. I'm there to create photos for them. I mean, again, no different to traditionally a photographer taking photos for a tourism board, which has been around for a long time. But this time, the tourism board can spend less money and get more because they now get the influencing work. They now get the social media reach, which is huge value to anyone who has any product or service to promote. You know, back in the days, photographers could charge a lot more because there were few of them, and they didn't have to offer much else in return. These days, it's very competitive. And I think that also sums up the whole Instagram world. It is super competitive. It sounds very romantic about, oh, I'll just go on a trip, but to actually get a job, and to sustain your income with this, I think there's a difference about, you know, some people go on a trip maybe once a year, but for this to be actually my full-time job, you have to hustle a lot. And what that hustle consists of is you send out a lot of emails. You sometimes have an agent working for you. So some people do. I do know from some of my friends overseas, especially in Europe and the US, that budgets and speed of work are a lot more intense. New Zealand things are just a bit slower, as we know, which is why a lot of people move here to work. It's a bit easier to get into it, but also sometimes a little bit tougher because as someone on social media, my following is very global. So, you know, it doesn't really matter to me where my clients come from in that respect. But so, yeah, there's talent agencies all across the world that manage people's on Instagram work, basically. For a lot of people, that's how work is done for them. You know, they're a talent, they're an actor or whatever they are, photographer, they get given work, they do the work, that's it. For me personally, with that agent I am just going out of, not a ton of work came through. So most of the work came through myself. Again, how would that work? I would pitch. I would be like, okay, I am going here because I have to visit my family in Austria, let's say. This is, by the way, not true because this is just barely a holiday for me. But okay, I'm visiting my family in Austria. How about I'll get in touch with the Austrian Tourism Board, companies I could work with. How about I get in touch with, okay, what would I be wearing? Kathmandu gear, I don't know, you know. And I will get in touch with all these brands and you would offer them something that they don't have. You would make them understand how much value you can give them. That value can be creatively, it can be in terms of PR, and then you make it happen that way.
Wow, you're hustling a lot.
Yeah.
You're doing market research.
Oh, you're doing everything.
You're seeing gaps in the market, pitching.
Oh, you're pitching,
proposing
a lot. Like,
wow.
And I would, for example, I'm hosting Sony workshops in New Zealand now. So photo workshops and social media workshops in partnership with Sony. I left... Sony is just going to be like, oh God. But I left a good amount of voicemails on the Sony digital team's phones about half a year ago, and I've never heard back. And I mean, I would have probably been trying to get in touch with Sony for a year or so, because I sell so many Sony cameras without, you know, trying to. It's just that what happens, people text you what camera to use. They're like, oh, I bought this, great. So I was like, I have value for you, and I'm also a female photographer that doesn't talk just about settings. It could be something that could be good for you. But, you know, they didn't ever get back to me. And then you get a call. I got a call in May or late April from one of the Sony guys in New Zealand. It's like, oh, we just listened to your call. I'm like, I left it to you in December. What happened?
Wow.
But that's
took
just,
6 months, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's most of the time, I think people don't understand, especially people on social media don't understand that the market works without them already. So you have to do something else. You have to give some unique value, because otherwise you're not needed. Like, it's not, people are not waiting for you to put out yet another National Geographic worthy photo. I mean, there's so many talented people, but at the end of the day, you do have to actually let people hear that and let people find you and give it time. So I think that's why it's really important for me also to have some freelance projects every now and then. There's a couple of clients I have in New Zealand that I just take photos for. You will not see them on my social media. And that's that. And I know, you know, I don't have to hustle for those. They're there because I've been taking photos for them for years now. And that's good.
Yeah.
So
now, you did mention National Geographic. I noticed on your feed there was the photo you took at Lake Louise in Alberta.
Oh, yes.
Which got featured as a year shot on Nat Geo. Can you talk about sort of how that played a role in terms of your reach and your audience?
I'm not even sure if my audience grew that much, but what definitely grew a lot is my self-confidence, because that was one of the first travel shots, like truly, you know, landscape shots I posted and I took. I took it on a crop sensor camera, my first camera I ever bought. I think RAW mode, maybe not JPEG. I think it was that advanced back then, but definitely not in manual settings. So it was just a very lucky shot that I got, and it ended up being on National Geographic. And it made me understand that what I'm doing can actually have a future, which I truly did not. You know, this was in my, well, when was this? 1 year, 2 years ago now, I think. And I was still planning on going back to my master's degree and that job I was offered. I was not banking on Instagram giving me a life. So I was basically having a good OE, a very long OE trip. So yeah, that made me just understand that I can actually work harder and produce more of this to grow. And so I did. So it was great. Good. It's good for myself more than my audience.
And I noticed on your feed, your photos for that Nat Geo photo were very colorful and contrasty. And then kind of maybe 6 or 7 photos beyond that, everything had a very consistent preset grade look that you had developed. Can you talk about the decision to make that consistent look and how you developed that look?
Mm-hmm. So I think I started developing that look about 10 months ago or so. So I must have reposted that Nat Geo photo then, because that Nat Geo photo initially was like 1 or 2 years ago already. But what happened is, again, I just started to gain a bit more self-confidence because I traveled a lot more and I just created a lot more photos that I wasn't necessarily going to share, but I was just proud of myself. And, you know, it's so crucial, especially being a creative that never studied creativity as such, to have that kind of inner belief. And I got a little more of that. And that made me then look a bit more critically at my work and with a little less kind of ego attached, just kind of like, okay, this is that. What else could I do? And I just understood that they weren't flowing so well together. And I love to look at things when they just flow, you know, when it makes sense. When you can create a brand. I mean, I think branding has always been so fascinating to me. And for anything that you remember, it's a reason you remember it. And so I wanted... I didn't go and, you know, didn't write a huge marketing plan. I didn't do anything, but I just had it in my mind. And so when I started posting, I'm like, okay, how about I post this now instead of this? It was very subtle. It wasn't like, okay, I'm changing everything. And then I guess I got a bit more savvy with Lightroom and I started turning down the clarity a bit and going a bit away from that just full, intense HDR life that I was living back then. So it just kind of... Calmed the farm a bit on my photos.
That's cool. It's a very cool look.
Thank you.
I love it. And so the copy is, I find, a lot of times just as, if not more important than the photo sometimes. Can we talk about sort of your process of writing the copy for each photo?
Totally.
Do you just do it on a whim, 5 minutes, done, post, or do you really sort of similar, write it, get a sleep cycle and read it, edit? Like, can we talk a little bit about that?
So ideally that will be the case. That is only the case if it's a sponsor post, because I have to send it to someone to approve it, which is rare. So most of the time I have in my notes just a ton of ideas. Often whenever, you know, or I would read a book the night before and I'd underline a lot of things in a book, and then I would run upstairs to my bedroom and just look at the book and I'm like, oh, okay, this could be something I could talk about. Or, I mean, the other day I posted a chef's table quote because I remember being watching it. I'm like yelling at my boyfriend to stop. I just need to write this down right now. So it's a very like in the moment, oh, this is interesting. I'm just going to put this down. And then I don't know why I haven't learned this, but I'm yet to do this. So at the moment, it's just me going, oh no, I have to post right now. Oh, what am I going to post? Okay, then I'll find the photo and oh, what's the caption? And I just usually have a very calm moment. I look at the photo and it comes to me very quickly. I know that when I can't think of a caption whatsoever, then something isn't quite right with the photo. It's the same way, like if I can't get an edit right, and there are some photos I've tried and tried and I've gone back and tried to edit and just look strange. It's just not the right photo then. Yeah. So... yeah. If the photo doesn't tell me something, then I feel like it can't tell other people anything.
So a little bit, you got to be in flow state almost.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, to come up with it. That's fascinating. I'd like to shift a little bit into sort of the whole process of posting and then engagement with fans, and then you build a following, and then comes expectation. Can we talk a little bit about the pressures of social media and producing content. Have you learned any skills along the way that's helped you manage these things?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I also think that a lot of the pressure comes from myself. I think social media then goes and makes them a lot more strong and powerful. But a lot of the pressure is quite inherent. And I think especially with social media, the pressures are to adhere to some kind of model of perfection and to some sort of standard of quality and a tone of voice and, always to have a value provided with everything. But then being a female, having grown up in quite an academic setting, those are all the values I've been driven with, and I've always been I've always had the pressure of fulfilling as well. So I think social media, I fear for this youth, and I sound so old saying this, but it's true, because having, just your normal world giving you a pressure of living up to something, and then having social media being so much stronger with the same, with those same tones and same voices, can be tough. For me, I think it's all about perspective and understanding it is actually just an app. And my whole work doesn't depend on it. I think we like to tell our people in my industry anyway, like to tell ourselves without the app that there wouldn't be anything. But it's not true, because I think for anyone that has sticked with something for a number of years, despite lack of money, lack of support, lack of job security, being ripped over so much by businesses and underpaid and all the things that happen on social media and entrepreneurship, you don't really, it's not just the app that has done it to you, it's also just your own work ethics that have gotten you there. So I think it's for me to understand where am I coming from, and that it's okay because Instagram isn't everything. And for me also, luckily, a huge part for me is that I wasn't on Instagram before I started it for my website or blog back then. So I wasn't much of a user. That was hard for me the first year, as I explained, because it just kind of got me into this crazy world of feeling not good enough. But once I got out of that again, I don't need it much in my own life. So I don't rely on it so much in that way. But yeah, it does. The pressure can come and go. I think there's just a general pressure of always being someone. And it's a millennial thing as well, I think. It's just an ego thing, feeling like you have to be someone. It's like, there are always plenty of people in this world. I don't have to be someone. I just have to be myself. It's a constant reminder. And I think that a personal reminder to myself. And I think that reminder comes from all the outside activities I do in my life, from whether that's meditation or making sure my relationships in my life are good, making sure that I get sleep, that my happiness is not reliant on an app I can't control. My happiness is instead reliant on maybe the kind of work I produce. For me, I'm actually much happier when I see the photo on my computer screen. The posting in is a bit stressful. I like to just see it. I mean, I have so many photos on my computer that I posted a gorilla photo last week that also went on National Geographic as well, on the Your Shot one. And I didn't know I had that photo until last week. I took that photo last October. I took it. I loved it. I forgot to do anything with it. I forgot to publish it. It happens all the time to me. So for me, it's just to getting off the phone, actually.
Yeah.
I'm babbling on.
No, it's great. Outside of Instagram, I'm curious, you talked about being happy. Where do you find your most inner calm and peace? Not talking about photography, outside of that.
I think it's just when I'm kind to myself and kind to others. So what means kind to myself? Kind to myself means that I take care of myself, of my body. So I would exercise, I would possibly meditate, or just have some kind of practice of calming down, just basically breathing. It sounds so ridiculous to say, but it is actually really powerful. And also being kind to myself and kind to others in terms of my relationships, making sure I'm not isolating myself, which can be so easy on social media and working for yourself. It's so isolating. No one talks about this. No one talks about the fact that it actually can be so lonesome. You're in a group with your social media friends, but you're also in competition with them at all the time. There's a lot of people who are very honest or very open, let's say. Honest is the wrong word, very open-minded. And so you find yourself a lot of the time by yourself. So for me, it's like having most of my friends that I spend time with don't even have Instagram. So it just connecting with others, connecting with myself, I think that's when I feel the best. And if you put sunshine and good food in there, I'm happy as Larry.
That's awesome. What kind of meditation do you do?
Headspace.
That's great. I use Headspace
kind of meditations
too. Yeah. It's brilliant. Yeah.
It's really good.
Very cool. You talked a little bit about Instagram and the coveted blue check. Can you talk a little bit?
She made it.
Yeah, she made it. Can you talk a little bit about, well, I'm curious how you got your blue check, but then also sort of how you view it.
The blue check is, I think, to me, such an epitome of what's happening in our social world, in our perception of success. It is so interesting. It's tick. I mean, I can't really compare it to anything in the past. It's a tick, but it gives people this feeling of jealousy and this feeling of, well, clearly that means, this tick means that I can trust the level of success and the level of influence, the level of celebrity status, whatever it could be, of someone else that I don't even know what they do or who they are. It's amazing. It's one little tick. So I do get messages about it nearly every day. It's kind of slowed down in the last few weeks, which I'm grateful for, but man, it is unbelievable. And I get messages from people who have like 5 million followers who don't even follow me. And they're just like, how did you get the tick? That's the only, there was no hide, there's no bias. How do you get the tick? And I'm like, mate, like you have 5 million followers? I'm honestly like, I'm sure you have a manager. Maybe ask him. I can't really help you. So how I got the tick was my Instagram actually got hacked. So I didn't have it for a few days. I actually thought it was all gone, which that was 1.5 years ago now, I think. I honestly thought, to me, when that happened, that's like a sign, of life just telling me I have to get on with my life and I now have to become a professional again, because I felt just so random. I mean, I was upset initially, but then I was like, okay, well, I can't log in anymore. This is gone. I reported it to Instagram about 1,000 times. I ended up getting it back, and I ended up having to like verify my profile. You have to send them a picture with your face and like a handwritten note and a signature and all these strange things. And then shortly after, there was an option on Facebook, which I don't think many people know about. Maybe that I just came across it because I was maybe changing something in my settings. But anyway, there was a very legitimate option on Facebook to apply to get verified. Like, you just had to apply. Again, I had to do the same thing that I had to do when I got hacked. So I had to send them the photo, and then they verified me. I mean, on Facebook, I've got no fault, maybe 4,000 or something, but I got the tick straight away. Like, it took maybe 2 weeks and I got the tick. And then a few months later, it carried through to Facebook, to Instagram.
Oh, that's, wow.
Yeah.
So it happened on Facebook first and then it trickled through.
Yeah. But so that's usually what I tell people. But I do believe that option might have, I'm not sure if that option is still there on Facebook. Don't know.
True.
Yeah. It's just a tick.
Yeah, it is just a tip.
But sometimes people are like, so, sorry, are you a celebrity? Or like, are you someone else that I should know? And I'm like, you really don't have to know me.
Thanks for sharing that.
That's okay.
So you've recently celebrated your 25th birthday.
I did.
Happy belated.
Thank you.
I'm curious about goal setting. Have you set any goals for the next 5 years?
Mm-hmm. Okay, what have I set? There's a lot of personal goals. So there's my boyfriend and I, my partner's in the army, and so we don't, he's overseas at the moment, so we don't, you know, we sometimes see each other a lot, sometimes not so much. So a personal goal for us is definitely to live together, possibly overseas. We live together already, but to actually have a life, an everyday life together. So that's a personal one of mine. We really want to live overseas. For me, it's really important because he's Kiwi. We've been together for nearly 7 years. I'm Austrian. It'd be nice to live somewhere new so that I'm not the visitor and, you know, he's the homeboy. So that's a personal one. For me professionally, get as many National Geographic features as possible. No, I don't know. This whole like National Geographic thing is really funny to me because I guess it's one of the only magazines I read growing up. So it will be a dream come true, but I don't know how many, this might be like 40 years from now, but to one day be actually in a National Geographic magazine, I think my life can be just done then. I'm good.
Like a printed magazine.
Yeah, like an actual print. Yeah. I had an exhibition earlier this year in Hong Kong, and so another goal for me is to have more exhibitions. That was for charity. I would love, so an exhibition for, a goal for me this year is to hopefully make an exhibition in New Zealand happening. So more exhibitions, more print, more tangible things. And another personal goal in five years, for the next 5 years, I would definitely like to have actually a business that I can employ and work with a team. And it doesn't have to be about me, it doesn't have to be about photography, but just something that isn't reliant on me driving something that is on social media. Just me actually, I love to create things and I love to work with people. So actually employing a team and we can create whatever product in whatever industry it's in, just to have a business and yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Are there particular businesses that you have in mind?
There's so many ideas, but there's definitely like sustainable fashion is a big one, especially in the online world. And now for me, knowing the in and outs of social media and how it all works behind the scenes, there's so much to be utilized. Like for me to help grow a brand is so easy these days because I just know how it works.
You've been through it, yeah.
Yeah. So there's definitely something in the fashion world, maybe something in the service industry. I'm not so sure, but I would love to have a tangible team of people just working towards it. It can be very small, but just, yeah, have a team.
An A team to pull off some dream projects.
Exactly.
Very cool. So, where can people find you online?
Oh, not many places, actually. I don't have that many social media accounts. It's best to go on Instagram. It's Kariman Hatta. There's no N in my last name. It's a strange name. It's okay. It's also my website, karimanhatta.com. Facebook, that's about it.
Oh, cool.
Oh, your podcast, clearly.
Awesome. Well, I want to start off by saying thank you for inspiring me. I'm a photographer, I love to travel, and I love your work. And I think everyone should check out your work and what you do. And also thank you for making the time today to be on the podcast. It's been a pleasure to sort of geek out about photography with someone who's making a lot of beautiful images and inspiring a lot of people to go out and adventure and travel and check out the world. So
thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Very grateful.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode. If you enjoyed listening to the show, I would greatly appreciate it if you can leave a review in iTunes. Next week, I'll be trying something a little bit different. I'll be sharing a bit about what I've been up to during this gap year away from working in visual effects. I hope we can catch up then.